If you are looking for even more help and guidance on your breakup, I have a few different options for you to take your healing to the next level. I have 4 different online courses depending on what stage of the breakup that you're in, from beginning all the way into moving on after heartbreak. Or you can bundle all of my courses together and use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. I also have my 30-day no contact challenge to help hold you accountable in going no contact with your ex. And we have our free Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with other people going through breakups all over the world. To learn more about any of these resources, head to the show notes where you can learn more about my courses, take the quiz to figure out which course is best for you, or join the Facebook group. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. You know, after going through a breakup, your photos need to be replaced and memory lane can feel like a scary place to walk down. But don't forget that you still have so many people in your life who love you and so many memories that don't involve your ex. And Artifact Uprising is here to help you preserve your meaningful moments this holiday season. I have been an Artifact Uprising customer for years now, and I love that they have such high quality prints and beautiful books that are great for putting up in my home or giving as gifts. Just recently, I made a photo book with photos of my 3 boys from this year. But what I also made, which I highly recommend all of you do, is I made a book with photos of just my best girlfriends, which I now have on my coffee table. It's such a great way for me to see all of my favorite memories with the women in my life who are my rocks. So whether you want to put up some new photos with friends and family around your house, or you want to put together a book as a thank you for the people who are holding you up during this tough time, Artifact Uprising is the place to do it. Artifact Uprising makes it easy to tell your story. Through the end of the year, Heal Your Heartbreak listeners can give Artifact Uprising a try and get 20% off for new customers or 15% off if you have purchased before. Just visit artifactuprising.com and use code HEARTBREAK through December 31st. Welcome to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast with your host, Breakup Bestie, aka me, Kendra. Breakups are hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Each week, I will be taking you through a different topic as it relates to breaking up, healing from heartbreak, growing in your single life, dating, and getting back into happier and healthier relationships. The goal of this show is to provide support, hope, tips, and to remind you that above all, this too shall pass. Welcome back to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Today, I am so excited to introduce actually a friend that I originally met in real life, Shiva Rajai. She is an expert on obsessive compulsive disorder, and I actually met her in a mom group for when I had my twins back in January. And once I learned that what she specialized in, and I had been hearing rumblings of this term of relationship OCD, and so I asked her, hey, do you talk about relationship OCD at all? And she said, you know what, I wrote a book on it. So instantly had to have her on the podcast. So fascinating to learn about, really just get like a really good background understanding on what obsessive compulsive disorder is and how it differentiates from a lot of the ways that it's portrayed in the media. So she gives a really great education on that. And then we talk about what is relationship OCD and how does it impact people in relationships, how it can lead to relationships breaking up, how it can really be debilitating for people who are constantly needing to be validated within their relationship or constantly feeling like they can't find the right person. We talk about this obsession on finding the one, finding your soulmate, and how that can be really damaging to people. We talk about the concept of good enough relationship, and that's been the theme in a couple episodes recently, and I think that's really important. But I learned so much from her, and I'm really excited for you guys to learn about relationship OCD, whether or not you're someone who feels like that might resonate or not. I think it's such an important thing to just be aware of and something that you can work on while you're navigating this breakup. So here is Shiva. Welcome, Shiva, to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Very fun to have someone I know in real life on the show. That doesn't happen very often. So I'm very excited we get to do this.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Kendra. I'm super excited to be here and glad we got a little break from the kids to be able to sit down and chat.
Yes. So for a little backstory, we met at It's in our local area, New Mom School, which is like kind of a community center for moms to connect with people who have babies the same age. So we're in the second time mom group together. And when you started talking about what you did, it like made my ears perk up. And then I ended up coming up. So I talked about it in the intro, but your specialty is in obsessive compulsive disorder. And I asked you, like, hey, do you ever talk about relationship OCD? Because this is like, I feel like I start hearing like buzzwords about relationships in my DMs. And I'm like, I don't know what that is. I need to go look it up. And so I'd been hearing that term. So I went up and asked you. And turns out you literally wrote the book on it. So what made you specialize in OCD in your practice? Like, what drew you to that area?
So I had actually been really drawn to working as a therapist. Like I knew I wanted to be a therapist. I wanted to go pursue that in my graduate program. And as luck would have it, I sort of ended up working at an OCD clinic as a trainee at the time. And it's sort of serendipitous because I was working with clients at the time and it just dawned on me. I was like, the clients all remind me of myself, which was a crazy experience because then I went on to get diagnosed with OCD, but it was after I began training as a specialist. So specializing is what actually led me to my own diagnosis, to my own treatment with an OCD specialist, and then I was becoming an OCD specialist at the same time. So it felt very like meant to be that I would end up here.
That's so interesting. And I want to clarify just because I feel like OCD is one of those words, and you could speak to this, that feels kind of overused and not, I would say, probably used very lightly, where you hear someone say, oh, I have OCD, I want my house clean or something like that. Can you get into what is OCD and what is, I guess, what you would call like a true case of it versus, just wanting, I don't know, your shoes to be lined up?
Totally. Yeah, it's been used pretty lightly in the media. There's sort of like this light usage of like, oh, I'm so OCD, I'm so OCD. People even say that to me, which is funny if they know what I do. But there is a really big difference between the sort of like debilitating mental health condition of obsessive compulsive disorder and having a preference for your room to be tidy or having a preference for your shoes to be lined up, or that's sort of like a person who's perfectionistic. But being a perfectionist isn't the same as having this mental health condition, which World Health Organization has classified it as one of the top 10 most debilitating mental health conditions ever. So it really isn't this sort of like, yay, we organize our, organization can be a facet of OCD, but it's almost always this really excruciating experience of having intrusive thoughts. They can be something like, what if I'm a bad person? What if I don't love my partner enough? What if I'm gay? What if I'm trans? What if I'm anything other than my sort of identity I identify as? And then it's associated with this desire to then want to go and clean that up. So the cleaning can happen like you're physically seeing someone washing their hands. But I think what people don't understand a lot is that mentally there's a lot of washing going on. So for somebody with OCD and sort of the mental forms, like the kind I had, you'd never be able to look at me and think, oh, she has OCD. I'm not even particularly clean at all. I'm pretty messy. But I'm all day long kind of like scrubbing, well, I used to at least scrub my mind clean. And that's where you can get really, your quality of life gets really poor.
That's all you're able to focus on, I imagine.
Yeah, it feels really dire. So it's like, to the outside world, someone's like, oh, I don't know. Well, I don't know. Maybe you love them. Maybe you don't. Why does it really matter? And for the person with OCD, whatever question is in their mind, it feels like do or die. Like it feels 10 out of 10 urgent. So the compulsion then, which would be like the cleaning, the scrubbing, the thinking, it is really debilitating versus the way people talk about like, yeah, I'm an organizer. I want my clothes to be in a certain way. Do you want them to be a certain way, or do you have to have them a certain way, or you destroy it if they're not? Are you trying to wash some thought out of your mind? So there's a big difference in how we talk about OCD kind of casually versus when we talk about it clinically.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And when we're talking about relationship OCD, what does that look like? I imagine it's, the obsessive thoughts that come into play. Can you talk about what that looks like?
Sure. I'm glad it's getting so much more attention because I think it's leading to a lot more appropriate diagnosis. But basically, OCD is the diagnosis. So when we think about the DSM-5, which is sort of like our handbook for diagnosis, all mental health professionals would use this. you're not going to see relationship OCD in there. You're just going to see OCD in there. And then underneath the umbrella of OCD, we have all these like manifestations of OCD, and they sort of attach to like taboo themes in the human experience. So we have sexual orientation OCD, which is like, what if I'm not the sexual orientation I think I am? What if I'm gay? What if I'm, again, straight if I identify as gay? And then we have things like the washing and checking. We have the what if I'm a bad person? And so one of these manifestations is basically this preoccupation with the rightness of your relationship. So it can look like, what if I'm not truly in love with my partner? What if I'm faking it? What if I'm not attracted enough to them? And it can also look the reverse, which is like, what if they don't love me enough? So it's this sort of preoccupation with how right or compatible you are in a relationship.
Interesting. Okay. Does this exist only if someone is in a relationship, or can it happen for people that maybe are not in relationships, but they're obsessing on the idea of relationships? Or is it strictly for people who are like in committed relationships?
It's a great question. So I think the thing to understand is like, well, why do we even see this anxiety develop? Because if we can understand why the anxiety develops, then we can see why it usually does come up when we're in a relationship. In fact, when we're in a viable relationship, because you also don't see ROCD really pop up too much with like summer F-boys or anything. Like it's not really in that context, because there's no real risk, right? There's no real emotional diving board you're climbing out on. If you're kind of just like, I don't know, casually dating, whatever, like there's no real risk you're going to get hurt, essentially.
The thing is that
ROCD is, what it looks like is all these preoccupied thoughts with the rightness of the relationship. Am I in the right relationship? Do I love them enough? Do they love me enough? And what it really is this question of like, am I safe in a relationship? So if the relationship isn't serious, it tends not to trigger that safety response. But when you're dating someone and you're like, whoa, like I could love this person. I could marry this person. I could fall for this person. This person could hurt me. They could break my heart. That's more often where you're going to see these, what this really is, which is kind of this defense mechanism pop up. That's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Maybe you don't love them. Maybe you think they're too dumb. Maybe you think they're not funny enough. Maybe whatever. It's this way your psychology tries to protect you from getting your heart broken.
Okay. That's really interesting. And I know, I don't know, just relating this to maybe just, we've had a lot of people on with like attachment style, because it sounds like this could be on one end, like anxious attachment style, where you're constantly obsessing of, am I safe in this relationship? Or like the avoidant, where you're obsessing on, is this right for me? Am I settling on the right kind of person? How does it differ from maybe just anxious or an avoidant attachment style?
Yeah, another awesome question. So anxious and avoidant attachment styles are really correlated with ROCD. Okay. There's actually studies being done on how much they're correlated with like OCD at large. But we do have the research to support that if you have an anxious or avoidant attachment style, actually even a disorganized attachment style, you are more likely to exhibit these kinds of like hyper-vigilant behaviors in a relationship, which makes sense because there's usually trauma involved there. I would say that how are they different? They're not different. The attachment styles inform the diagnosis. So if you're someone with an anxious attachment style or an avoidant attachment style, you are more at risk of experiencing relationship OCD because you already have this history that says, hey, relationships can be dangerous places for me. And your psychology remembers that.
Got it. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I know one thing that you talk about in just the topics that you had sent over is this idea of the one, like the soulmate, and I resonate so much with that because I hear that so often in messages from people of, oh my gosh, I lost the one, or how do you know it's the one? How do you know when you're in love? How do you like, is it supposed to be perfect? In this idea that I see on social media, it feels like this mountain that we don't really even know exists, I guess. So what are your thoughts on like people really telling you like you got to hold out until you meet your soulmate, you meet the one, and you'll know when you meet the one?
Ugh, I hate all of that.
Yes.
I hate.
I do really too.
Yeah. I think we're on the same page with that. I hate that. I hate butterflies as kind of like, oh, you're going to feel the butterflies. If you don't feel the butterflies, it doesn't, you're not excited enough. You're not sexually attracted enough. Like, these are such generalities to be applying to, you know, what is like probably one of the biggest decisions, one of the biggest factors in our life happiness. Like, please do not trust this general platitude about love. I mean, I just think it's so basic. To get a little bit more into it, it's, you know, the idea of the one, if you look back at kind of its inception and how it's kind of gained traction in kind of like our cultural conversation, it's really taken over the role of like the village, and it's taken over the role of religion. It's fascinating when you look into to sort of this idea that we had these big communities. You know, we loved our friends. We loved our siblings. We had multiple people where we were getting our needs met by all these people in our village. And we made these drastic moves to the cities. We became incredibly individualistic. We lost out on all this support, right? And then also we became less religious, really, as an overall culture. And I'm not advocating that we necessarily go back to any of this per se, but it's key to understand that we took all of these needs that were being met in lots of different ways for awe, right? For inspiration, for sexual satisfaction, friendship, relational satisfaction, for, you know, you might be my confidant, be everything. And we turned it into one person. And then we're asking someone, some normal person, to be all of this for us. You know, it's completely ridiculous. And it's why we have the divorce rates we do. I mean, it's a huge piece of why relationships are so unhappy and why they fail.
Wow. I've kind of heard the topic of, like, I think Esther Perel talks about it, where we're putting, but the religion piece is very, very interesting, because it is, and, you know, I feel like I'm on kind of the back end of stuff where I'm talking to people as they're going through the breakup. But that's a question so many people ask, is how do I get this person off the pedestal that I have them on? And it is, that makes so much sense that we are seeking this. We do have partners up on this pedestal of like spiritual satisfaction. And there's so much that we put on partnerships. And I've shared this on the podcast before, but I remember when Luke and I had been together, we'd probably been married for like 6 months. And I remember I asked him, I think I was watching a show, and they were talking about how obsessed someone was with their partner. And I turned to Luke and I said, "Are you obsessed with me?" And he said, "No." And I, at first I was like, "Excuse me." But then the more I thought about it, I'm like, yeah, that's right. That's the right answer to say, is like, we should not be obsessed with our partners. It's, I don't know. I love this conversation, because I do think we put so much on partners, and probably why breakups hurt even more than they would need to.
Totally. I want to pick up on that last point there, which is that, like, you know, think about what you're losing, you know, because you're losing a person when you're breaking up, but you're also losing out on like the dream, you know, like when you join with someone, you're saying like, this is the person who's going to save me. I'm going to be special. I'm going to be seen. I'm going to be satisfied. And it's like, what a disappointment when that doesn't work out, you know? And if you can really talk about relationships in a different way and say, like, maybe expecting a lot, you know? And that's not to say every break, like, of course, relationships end for lots of different reasons, and most of them are totally valid, but sometimes they're not valid. Like, sometimes our expectations are the problem. I think that needs to be said. And I joke in my book and my writing sometimes too, it's like, people might look at me and be like, oh, she's kind of down on love or whatever. But I'm like, no, I love love. I just want it to be real. Like, I'm trying to save love from what I call sort of like the grip of perfectionism. Because I don't think that other stuff has lasting power. I think you have to really look at things realistically if you want the real fruits of long-term relationship.
Yeah. And that is such a hard thing. And that's why I've really never gotten into the realm of like how to know if you should break up with someone, because that would never be my thing to say. Sure. But I've also talked to so many people who have ended relationships that, I mean, I guess I would argue needed to be ended, but they get caught up in this thing of, what if this is the best I can get? Or I feel like there's probably that happening on both sides where it's, okay, I know maybe intuitively I need to end this relationship, but I have all these thoughts telling me that I'm never going to do any better. This is the best I'm ever going to get. And then on the other side, where someone wants to end it because they're not living up to these probably unrealistic expectations that we set. So how can we tell the difference between just that anxious thoughts or that gut feeling?
Yeah, it's funny. I try not to give answers to that kind of stuff either. And like, that's one of the reasons I think people will kind of come to at least my work being like, well, is this person the right one for me? Or should I end the relationship? And I'm like, I should never answer that. And I'm not in a position to comment on that either. You know, I'm not the expert on your relationship. One of the things I think is helpful to think about is like, anxiety is a really like urgent and immediate emotion. So it sort of is like, do it now, do it immediately, get out, right? Or like, you'll never find anyone. Like, that's the one for you're blowing it. Like, the tone of anxiety, if you can hear it in yourself, it's not a balanced, settled tone. Whereas like, if you're, I tell clients sometimes, I'm like, you know, you're walking along the beach, you are well slept, you're calm. Intuitive knowing sort of bubbles up from underneath. And it's not in a rush. It's like, you'll break up with them. You do it now, do it next month. Like, no big deal. This isn't it for you. And the tone is completely different. So it's not an answer, but I like to tell clients, I'm like, don't listen to sort of the like urgent, anxious voice. Sit on that or sleep on that. Or like, let's see what happens in a few days or a few nights. But it is tough to know. Like, sometimes that anxiety is telling you to stay. Sometimes that anxiety is telling you to leave. That's why I really like to work with clients to get the anxiety down so they can actually see their truth more clearly. Because I don't know their truth. I'm figuring it out right alongside them.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I know that when I'm navigating a tough chapter in life, my self-care practices tend to go out the window. And unfortunately, I've learned the hard way that a hard time is exactly when I need to make sure I'm sticking to my self-care non-negotiables. Whether it's journaling, reaching out to friends, moving your body, or attending therapy, you deserve to take time for yourself, even when it feels like everything around you is a struggle. I love that therapy allows me to set aside time for me and forces me to focus on what I'm going through and myself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/heartbreak today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/heartbreak. Hormones are the last thing you want to be dealing with as you're going through a breakup, but they can also be hard to ignore, especially during the time of the month. This is why I love recommending Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, which has truly become a phenomenon trusted by over 2.2 million customers, and a bottle is sold every 24 seconds. I started taking Hormone Harmony to help balance my hormones after going through 2 pregnancies in 2.5 years, and I've continued to take it because it's made such a difference in my PMS with bloating, irritation, anxiety, and all the other not so fun symptoms that tend to pop up. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It has zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use code HEARTBREAK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEARTBREAK for 15% off today. Did you know that 9 out of 10 women lack dominance of L. crispatus, which is why many endure ongoing vaginal discomfort? That's why one of my absolute favorite supplement companies, Seed, created VS01 Vaginal Symbiotic to restore a healthy vaginal microbiome and sustain regulated pH levels. After using VS01 for just a couple months, I've noticed a difference. Other products out there often target only symptoms in ways that further disturb the microbiome, which is so important, just like your gut microbiome. VS01 marks a new era in vaginal care with a sustainable approach to address the root cause of imbalances. This is an ongoing system that maximizes efficacy with minimal impact on your day-to-day life. Shift from harsh reactive treatments to proactive sustainable care with VS01 from Seed. Go to seed.com/heartbreak and use code 25heartbreak to get 25% off. That's 25% off VS01 at seed.com/heartbreak, code 25heartbreak.
And I feel like, at least in my experience, the intuitive feeling, even if it's an answer I don't like, it's still very relieving to have it, you know, even if it's like a scary thing that I realize I have to do. Oh, I have to, you know, break up with this person, or oh, I have to do this. It is still like, okay, like, you know, at least I know this is like the right kind of feeling to have. Whereas, like you said, anxiety is very rushed and scattered and all of that. So I really like that distinction. And I mean, this is such a broad question and so much of what you talk about, but what are some ways that someone maybe in that position where anxiety is kind of just clouding everything for them, how can they start getting back to some kind of baseline so they can hear their thoughts or trust their feelings?
Yeah. You know, I think one big piece of like advice I would put out here, because I think it's really counter to the way we do think about our feelings and our anxiety, is, you know, not everything that you feel is true. And I think when people begin to start sort of noticing their feelings, you know, okay, I'm feeling really turned off by this person in the moment, or I'm feeling like I could be broken up with at any moment, or I feel like they're cheating on me or something. And we just take a step back or take a step to the side and we're like, oh, okay, I notice I'm having a feeling. We just create a little bit of distance between ourselves and the feeling. Even those little micro movements, they put us in a position to actually take a look at that and say like, well, but is that logical? Well, but is there any evidence he's cheating on me? Well, okay, I don't find him attractive right now. Does that mean I always find him not attractive? Is this, how important is attraction to me or whatever? Well, we can put ourselves in a situation where we're able to look at our feelings and take them for what they are, which is weather patterns. They're weather patterns. They're not facts. And that distinction right there, I think, can be the beginning of a lot of change for people in the way that they relate to their anxiety. And it can lead to a lot of clarity if you keep doing that work.
Yeah. And I like that you said that it is kind of counterintuitive to this thing that we're in now of, you know, trust your gut, you know, your feelings are valid, all this stuff. And sure, our feelings are valid, but our thoughts are not true. And if we take a look at one of my favorite books ever, I don't know if you read it, it's The Untethered Soul, where they talk
about.
Oh,
yeah. So good.
It like changed my life of just creating some kind of distance between your thoughts. You're not the person thinking your thoughts. You're the person hearing your thoughts. It's like so powerful too, because I assume, you know, in cases of ROCD and OCD, it makes you feel icky, the thoughts you're having, you know, where you start feeling guilty about, oh, I can't believe I'm thinking about this about my partner, or I can't believe, you know, and feeling a lot of guilt around that. So knowing that there isn't necessarily a reason to feel guilt around thoughts, because they're not real. They're not, you know, they're not reality, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I just think it's like, you know, take it all with a grain of salt, you know, and I think we really are taught that like, well, you thought it, so it's true, or that's your truth, or that's your deep intuition. And it's like, no, I mean, we have reactions to lots of things all day long. You know, take another situation. We can have a feeling that we're going to have a bad day or something and then go off to have a great day, a totally fine day. When it comes to relationships, we like to read these things as kind of like prophecies or something, you know, and it's like, no, yeah. You know, we're just humans doing human things. So don't take your feelings so very seriously. It's information, but it's not a mandate, your feelings.
Yeah. I think that's really important to reinforce. And the question that came to mind was, I feel like it probably could be easy for someone in a position where they are having those obsessive compulsive thoughts on, is this the right person? Is it easy to believe in a fantasy that the right person would quell those feelings and you wouldn't have it?
Yeah, that almost is the fantasy. Like when you think about what the one is, you know, the one is like salvation, you know? So if I find the one, my doubts will be calmed, but also my angst will be calmed. Like they're going to save me. You know, I go so far as to say, it's like we want the one to save us from being human. You know, we don't want to feel pain and discomfort and isolation. And just the more you talk about it, how big that responsibility is that we put on someone and how like far we can fall, you know, like, of course, then 3 months in, 6 months in, 2 years in, 10 years in, you're like, no, this is like an average normal person, you know? Sorry, I know I steered a little bit away from your question.
No, but that was essentially what the question is like, yeah, is there, I imagine some people can go down this path of feeling like, I don't know, maybe feeling like they can't be saved or they can't find happiness or every relationship. And you end up kind of being in this place of like a victim of, I'm never going to find love. I'm never going to be in this position where I can get the right person, when in reality, we're probably just tracking the wrong finish line. Does that track?
Yeah, that's a great way to say it. It's funny. I don't love when this advice is kind of given, at least in this way, mm-hmm. to sort of like, do you, like, it'll come when you least expect it. Like, I don't love that.
Yeah.
But I guess given the whole fixation on the one, like, a better way to frame that piece of advice is almost like, when you stop needing something to save you from yourself, you become a much more open, you know, channel for a good enough relationship, like a good enough partnership. I don't mind those words. Like, I use them deliberately. Like, good enough is wonderful. There's nothing wrong with having, you know, 8 out of 10 anywhere else in life is a total jackpot. So we need our relationships to be like 11s out of 10s or whatever it is. But yeah, if you can look at relationships realistically and see that they are going to be, you know, this person's coming into my life. Hopefully we'll have some shared values. We want to build a life together that's aligned. There's someone who I care about, who I am friends with, who I am. There's chemistry. I'm attracted to them, to who they are. Sometimes that's about physical. Sometimes it's less about physical. Sometimes it's more about energetical or spiritual or mental. But yeah, there needs to be attraction there. There needs to be draw. But it's like, maybe I have all of that. And also, like, I don't like the way they dress. You know, I wish their family were different, or they're not very career driven or whatever. It's like, you do 8 out of 10 is pretty good.
And I think if we're honest with ourselves too, I mean, I can be honest with myself. I'm not an 11 out of 10, you know, like if I'm, I need to remember that, like, I have things that pop up, and it's so easy to, I don't know. And, you know, being in the stage of life now with having 3 kids, it's very easy to like fall into the trap of, things are not perfect right now. Things aren't even great right now. Like, they're fine. We're fine. We're going to be fine. But it is, I imagine, and I think about people who have kids really early on in relationships, how that could be very scary to feel like, I'm not on even ground in the relationship. And then, you know, kids are thrust into that situation, and how scary that could feel to be like, oh my God, I married the wrong person.
Such a good point. I mean, such a good point that like totally resonates for me. We're in the exact same life stage.
Yeah.
You and I. And it's, they're definitely, it's like, if I have this belief that, you know, my partner's supposed to always be able to read my mind and do romantic things, and like, you know, everything, like intimacy is supposed to be perfect all the time. And we're supposed to, you know, and then you get into this stage where you're having young children and you're sleep deprived and nobody's getting their needs met and you haven't connected in months or whatever it is. It's so easy to be like, oh, this person's not fulfilling me, and they're supposed to, you know, yeah. Like, that's where it's really key. It's like, no, you know, it's not. This is a phase. This is a stage. We can feel a little disconnected right now. With more realistic expectations, you can see how I think the outcomes, the longevity, the satisfaction can be really brought back into a relationship as long as we look at them more realistically.
Yeah, I think that's really important for people who maybe are reflecting on past relationships or are, you know, thinking about dating again post. Because I know the post-breakup dating feels so scary in so many ways, because you're comparing a person that you just met to someone that you had like a 5-year relationship with. And obviously nothing can compare to that. So I know that can be a scary phase. I do want to talk, before we run out of time, I want to talk about people who, let's say someone is of the type where they constantly don't feel safe in a relationship, and then they get broken up with, and it's kind of like all their fears, everything comes to the front. And it feels like it's been proven to be true. How does someone cope with that? Or how does someone, you know, come back from that, where it does feel like, oh, it must be true. All these thoughts must be true because they happened.
Yeah. And I guess in the context of our conversation today too, it's like, well, that's a thought. You know, like, that is a thought that you're having. That's not necessarily the facts. Just because someone broke up with you, it doesn't mean you're unlovable. It doesn't mean that you're not worthy of connection. It doesn't mean that there's something super flawed about you. So you'd catch the thoughts at the distorted thought level, but that's also a person who needs to heal their attachment. You know, if that person does need to go back and really touch on, why do I believe I'm unlovable? You know, who taught me that I was unlovable? Who left me? Who made me feel abandoned? Because the story, that narrative of like, I'm not worthy of love, it's, they're going to find that in lots of different places unless they heal it fundamentally.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Yeah.
It becomes your reality because you're so afraid of it becoming your reality. So then you also get clingy. Like, there's lots of things that come of that.
Yeah. And again, even if you were to find the person who maybe in reality would be really safe, I just imagine going through long-term relationship of constantly feeling nervous that things, like the other shoes going to drop, of always having to have this. And I even remember, you know, when I think I was really kind of stuck in my anxious attachment, I remember like almost constantly kind of keeping score of, okay, last week we hung out 2 times, they initiated it. It was just like this kind of constant scorekeeping of, am I safe? Am I not? And I remember how exhausting it felt. And it felt like I couldn't fully be myself because I had to, I don't know, fit into this thing to make me feel safe.
That's really, you describe really well what it can look like when a person feels sort of unsafe, because that's what it looks like from the anxious attachment end. And then the avoidant attachment end would be like, well, do I like you today? Like, do I like you today? Are you annoying me today? Oh, you're so needy today. Like that's how it could look like on the other end.
Yeah.
But in those situations, you have a person who's kind of constantly temperature gauging, like constantly checking their temperature, right?
Yeah.
And when you look at it that way, it's the same as someone who's like constantly checking a lock or constantly washing a hand. Like, it's this behavior that's really a signal from your nervous system of like, I don't feel okay here. And if you compare that to someone who behaves securely in a relationship, like with a secure attachment, they're actually pretty like blasé. Like, they're just like, have fun, babe. Like, see you later. Like, oh, you didn't call me for a few hours. Like, they don't even notice these things because they're not operating in this narrative of like, I need to protect myself from this bad thing from happening. So yeah, there's a lot of healing, and it can happen bidirectionally. Like, it can happen from the top down, which is like working with thoughts and feelings. That's a lot of what we do in CBT therapy. And then it should happen sort of like bottom up too, which is like, what happened? You know, like, what happened that made you feel like you were going to get ditched?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to make sure to end on, is, you know, a solution kind of approach of, obviously therapy is a great place to be able to go through that. But can you, you know, kind of walk through maybe what someone should look for in a therapist if this conversation is really resonating with them? What should that look like?
Absolutely. So yeah, I mean, I think if you identify with like, I'm really feeling like this preoccupied, obsessional fixation on my relationship. You know, do they love me enough? Do I love them enough? Is it the right one? Are they the one? Am I happy enough? Is the sex good enough? Like, all of that stuff. If you're finding like that is taking over, you know, hours of your day, and you really can't relax into that kind of safe feeling in a relationship, there's absolutely work to be done. On my end of things, we're really, the OCD specialists are going to go in and work with those thoughts and feelings and try and really get you a bit more back down to, it's funny, I don't want to say reality, but in a way it is. It's like calming your nervous system down. So if there's a real threat, we register it, you know? Mm. Like, if you're getting pick up your phone and there's a text, you know, and it says like, had a great time last night, babe. Like, of course, like, you have a reaction to that, you know, like, that's not okay or whatever it is. But assuming you're being cheated on all the time, we see that a lot, right? Or, you know, again, once in a while, you look at your partner and you're like, oh, I'm not into this today. Your outfit looks dumb or whatever it is. Like, that's okay, you know? But if you're finding that you're preoccupied with these things and they're really not reality-based, that's the time when you want to get some treatment for it. So the OCD world will kind of handle your thoughts and feelings. Sometimes death therapy is needed, and that's really where you go in and you talk about mom and dad. Like, it's always mom and dad. So what did mom and dad do that made you feel so unsafe? Or what did you see in their relationship that made you feel unsafe? And the kind of therapy that we do, and really what I think works best, is actually both. So like an iceberg, you do the top down and then you also do the bottom up, and you really work holistically, because it's It's a big task to ask your nervous system to kind of sit back for a second so we can try on what it feels like to be safe. Mm-hmm. Like, I am okay. I'm going to behave like I'm okay. I'm not going to check the phone a million times. I'm not going to ask if you love me a million times or whatever it is. I'm going to behave like I'm safe. And then I'm actually going to kind of rewire my brain that way.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. And is this something people can work through if they're not actively in a relationship? Maybe they can they work in a way that they're reflecting on a past relationship where this came up? Just thinking most people listening to this aren't in active relationships.
Yeah, we have a lot of people. I really commend people who come in and want to do the work, or at least as much of the work as possible, maybe so that they, you know, before they're in another relationship, because they've seen the patterns. Like, gosh, you know, I've broken up with people time and time again because we get close and I get terrified. You know, I'm terrified of commitment or whatever it is. And those people come to therapy and they do some good work, and then they're really in a much better position when they start a meaningful relationship to catch these signs, especially before they kind of erode at a relationship. Because that's the reality of things, is it's really hard for a partner to have their trust, for example, questioned all the time, or to be told all the time that they're not whatever enough or something. So I really commend people who do the work at the start.
Yeah. When you were talking about that, like the constant temperature checking, I was thinking that would be very difficult to be on the other side of that relationship of constantly feeling like you're almost being tested in a way of, you know, and feeling like you could never tell the person enough that you want to be with them. That would be hard.
Yeah. It's also another really good indicator that maybe like more treatment is warranted if it is enough, you know, because I think it's one thing if you get reassured and you're like, that was reassuring, you know, we built some trust, I'm good. But if it's like, gosh, I'm asking this question of my partner every day, or I'm asking it every week or five times or whatever, like no answer being good enough is an indicator that it's much more about what we need to work on than some actual like issue of trust in the relationship, for example.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And this is so fascinating to learn about. Can you talk about your book a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. Right before I had my first son, actually, I had time to sort of put all this down on paper. And it's called Relationship OCD, and you can find it everywhere. And basically, it's just kind of like my life's work, both personal and professional, in book form. So if any of this conversation is kind of resonating, that's the place where we just blow it out. And there's also treatment in there. So talks everybody through kind of what to do, my journey, and also clinically what is the way through.
Amazing. Well, I will link your book and your website in the show notes. And so fun being able to talk to you in this regard and not talk about kids at all. And I hope everyone goes out and gets your book, and if people resonated, like feel some validation and relief from it. So thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Kendra. And thanks for what you're doing.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you loved it, I hope you'll leave a review and share with your friends. If you're not already following me on Instagram, head to @yourbreakupbestie, where I'm sharing new content almost every day. To join our Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with thousands of people from all over the world going through breakups, head to the link in the show notes. And don't forget to check out my online courses for more in-depth help through your healing journey. I always end these episodes the same way, reminding you to be nice to yourself, stay connected with loved ones, and the biggest reminder is that this too shall pass. I promise.